We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Anthony Herron, Score football analyst.
Khalil Mack, he's fast, he's ferocious. When Mack is coming from the backside, then he's a guy who can make a game-changing, game-altering sort of tackle, where if an Anthony Herron is chasing from the backside, all right, you may get tripped up on your ankles, but you're not necessarily as worried about some sort of a strip or takeaway happening.
Former NFL defensive lineman and Iowa Hawkeye.
I think Matt Nagy knows he needs to win some damn games.
Big Ant Herron with Dan Bernstein and Leila Rahimi on 670 The Score.
Let's talk some football with Anthony Herron, who has graced us with his presence. He is in studio.
Right. Press some stuff.
Right. Go. At Big Ant Herron on Twitter.
Bench press some stuff.
Score post-game show host, Big Ten Radio, Fox TV, and here he is with us. Anthony, I figured we would do a Bears segment and then college football merits you spreading your wings a little bit here.
I like
because
it.
Of everything that's
I like
going
it.
On.
Definitely
so
down for that.
The question that I have is, when we try to figure out what matters to us as Bears fans and observers about Saturday, if we don't know if Justin Fields is going to play. We know everybody's hurt. We know the coach is embattled. Does their quality of play matter? Does the outcome matter? How do we watch this game?
I'm going to be watching it through a developmental lens because, you know, there's enough people who've sort of moved on from the notion of Matt Nagy is the long-term answer as the Bears coach. He's still employed by the team, so he'll still be out there leading them when they take the field. But, you know, whatever in-game sort of managerial decisions happen, I don't think that's as important as just the talent on the field. And what does Travis Gibson look like in game? What does Justin Fields, of course, look like if he plays? At whatever point we see both Larry Borum and Tevin Jenkins on the field together, if that emerges, then what does that look like? I haven't necessarily felt like Khalil Herbert has run with the same sort of urgency now that David Montgomery's been back in the lineup. That you don't want to have a guy who needs to get the ball 12 to 15 times to get lathered up and get going. You know, if he can operate with a few, because he's not as good a running back as David Montgomery, certainly not in the all-purpose aspect of things, he's got to begin playing better as well. So there's enough youth in the lineup. There's enough youth that will be on the field for the Bears that from a developmental standpoint, you know, win or lose, there's no reason to think they should defeat the Arizona Cardinals. But the young guys on the field, will anyone else in the secondary beyond Jalen Johnson look like they can cover someone man-to-man? Because that's just going to be a part of the schematics in the NFL. You have to be able to hold up in man, and the Bears just can't if you're not named Jalen Johnson. So someone else has to begin emerging in that secondary as well. So that the developmental end of it, I think, should still be very important to Bears fans.
And conveniently enough, we find out that yesterday, both Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins were practicing. Yeah. And if the playbook is the same for the opposing team as anything we've seen in the several games, it's that they're going to try to take advantage of a mismatch where Hop against an already Burns, somebody in that yeah. in that same vein, whoever's healthy and on that side, is going to be the goal. But even Hop against Johnson, like I know he gets up right. for these type of matchups, Jalen Johnson does, but this is not looking pretty.
No. And I mean, you know, it's nice to see Robert Quinn get the NFC Defensive Player of the Month. That was well deserved.
Yes.
And I think that's where the aspect of who else emerges up front really matters, because Bilal Nichols, what he was exceptional at in college was his ability to penetrate, to get into the opposing backfield. And that was what made him special early in his time here as the Bears. And it seems like he's trying to make that transition to prove he can be more of a block hitter, more of a run stuffer. And he's not necessarily been showing the playmaking ability that he did in his initial seasons here. So I think Bilal Nichols is the type of guy where, you know, there's so many guys who are in either legitimate contract years or just the potential for contract years because of the cap situation that the Bears find themselves in. And Bilal Nichols falls into that category. So aside from Robert Quinn, if he continues to play at a special level, and Travis Gibson, nice to see him doing some things off the opposing edge. But what do you get from the interior? I mean, even against Detroit, we didn't see interior pass rush against that Lions offensive line that was consistently affecting the game. A couple of nice moments for Bilal Nichols, but I think he's the type of guy that still has, you know, this last six games here to showcase that, whether it's to the Bears, to the rest of the National Football League, that all that ability, all that those playmaking chops that he showed early in his career are still there.
In idle moments when my thoughts are spinning to strange places, I'm trying to imagine it through the prism
or
of
segment.
Being awake. Being awake.
I'm trying to imagine it through the prism of Matt Nagy and self-preservation professionally. Mm. If you are a head coach, nominally the head coach, also in charge of the offense, and you're trying to show your bosses that you deserve to stay on the job, what is the best thing he can do? Is it that we say, show what my offense can do with Andy Dalton, when somebody who I can trust to not make the mistakes and trust to get rid of the ball? Or is it to show your bosses how committed you are to the development of Justin Fields? What is the right way, if it's just purely selfish, and say, I'm going into this game to make sure the people are going to decide my fate, have the best read on me? What translates to the field?
To consistently get through a game and not look like the other coaching staff executed better than you did. That does not have to include his offensive system. And you know, it's taken him too long as the Bears coach to recognize that, in my opinion. And it's one thing to take the field on Thanksgiving against Detroit and obviously have the other coaching staff overmatched because they're the Detroit Lions.
They were going to do that whether you cared about it or
yes,
not.
You know, yes, the Bears sideline could have been empty and it would have been difficult to not outcoach what we saw from the Detroit Lions. And so with that in mind, you need to get through more games consistently and not obviously have these big gaffes. Now, you know, whether it's timeouts, whether it's indecision, whether it's play calls that just don't make sense in those moments, you have to make sure you at least have that buttoned up. And then, you know, the offensive system for whatever it is. I mean, you know, Andy Dalton is more suited for the system Matt Nagy wants to run than Justin Fields. That doesn't mean it's the Bears' best opportunity to win games. Like, just because Dalton is better at a certain system than Fields doesn't mean it's good for the offensive line. Doesn't mean it's good for your defense. Doesn't mean it's good for the entire structure of your team. And Matt Nagy needs to continue to recognize that and actually deploy it on game day. It's one thing to pay lip service to complimentary football or lip service to balance. I feel like we've seen him improve in that regard in year four, but it still hasn't been good enough to lead the Bears to victory. And so for Matt Nagy to, you know, if we view it through the lens of essentially saving his job, he has to prove that he can actually manage the game and coach within game strategically and to his players, to his personnel, in a way that gets the best out of them. And that's just not what he's done throughout much of the time here in Chicago.
Right. In some ways, I feel like he's coaching for highlights. He's like, I'm going to run this jet sweep until it works. And remember that one time it worked? That was pretty great. Yeah, if I ran the same play 95 times too, I'm sure one of them, by virtue of odds, would happen.
Right.
But I want to ask you about something that we heard Robert Quinn actually talk about. It was the game before, after the Ravens game. And him talking about the 1/11th. Take care of your 1/11th. Mm-hmm. You've been around coaching phrases all your life.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that I found interesting about that, given what we know about the Bears, is I was like, now hold on. As a teammate, you don't want to take care of just your 1/11th. You want to take care of other people when they're not playing their best.
Right.
Like, maybe it's 1/10th. Maybe it's 1/9th one day. Because you know you can do that. Like, and I gave Khalil Mack as the example. Present day Robert Quinn, the player of the month, that example. Like, he's picking others up, and he's not going to be upset about that. That's the nature of team. Didn't it seem a little CYA to you?
I think that...
Not out of him.
Right, right.
But out of the one who's perhaps implementing it.
I think there's, like you said, because it's, you know, it's kind of the standard, you know, sort of coaching jargon that's out there. I do think there's a balance that players try to strike, that coaches probably try to remind them to strike in the situation the Bears find themselves in, where there has to be a level of desperation in the halls at Hallis Hall right now. And you can be in a circumstance where perhaps you're attempting to do too much. And for Robert Quinn, where he addresses the media publicly very consistently, and he's fairly measured with his words more often than not, But he may even just be trying to set the example for younger guys, like perhaps for Kendall Vildor or Artie Burns or, you know, whatever linebacker's going to be in there this week for Roquan Smith, and just make sure that everyone recognizes that your task, like whipping that guy across from you, is what matters most. And then maybe if you emerge into being a Robert Quinn where you can maybe do the task of multiple people on a given play, then you're good with that. But because there's such animosity towards the team at times around the city right now, you know, younger guys hear that, you know, older guys and coaches are obviously hearing that as well, then it can get you outside of just the paradigm of getting your task at hand done. And then when you void a gap at a time that you shouldn't void a gap because you're trying to go like make a play, then maybe a big play gets ripped off by the opposing offense. And so my that's where my mind takes me with a comment like that, is the whole 1-11 thing. It applies to some guys who aren't as capable of maybe filling in or picking up for a teammate more so than it does for others.
Another Bears comment worth opinionating upon is Eddie Jackson coming out forcefully against the whole fire Nagy thing, saying we hate it and we don't like hearing it, saying it's not fair, it's not nice, etc. I understand that a high school crowd shouldn't be chanting it at somebody's kid.
Right.
That's above and beyond the pale. Mm. But Alex Brown pushed back a little bit, saying, wait a second here. Poor coach, right? He said, I think his word, and Layla, correct me if I'm wrong, because players get fired every week.
Yeah, he said that to Lawrence Holmes. Yes. He was like, hey, we get, like 30 of us get fired from a team every year, you know?
Right, so players always get fired. And like for a coach to have people wanting to fire him, like this is just the business. And it's, you say whatever you want cliches about major market or Chicago Bears heritage franchise, all that. And he just said, look, this is part of it. You don't want this, win. And I kind of like hearing that from a recent former player. Where do you fall on that continuum?
Yeah, I think it's fair. Both can be true. I think both can be very true. It can bother Eddie Jackson. And maybe Alex Brown was the type of guy who completely blocked it out and didn't care one iota about it. I think in the end, you know, and through Alex's lens that he sounds like he was talking about it through, we don't necessarily have to feel bad for people chanting fire Nagy, while at the same time, I think you can, you know, recognize if you're Eddie Jackson that it's not necessarily productive. So, I mean, just through, you know, just sort of those optics of whether or not fans are wanting the Bears to do well and rooting for them. And obviously, Eddie Jackson, really over the last couple of seasons here, has been under fire to some extent as well, not only from fans,
but he knows.
From great Bears players. And so for him, he's internalized a lot of that, a lot of that scrutiny and a lot of that pain that comes with feeling like folks don't recognize that you're doing your best or don't think that you're doing your job as well as maybe you think you're doing it. And so I would imagine on a human level, that's probably Eddie Jackson even relating to the situation that Matt Nagy finds himself in a little bit, because Eddie Jackson, after getting the big deal and being paid like the best safety in football, now still a top five safety in football, and he is under that type of scrutiny because his performance has not, certainly his playmaking, his on-ball playmaking ability hasn't lived up to that contract. And I think Eddie Jackson can sort of recognize what that is and what that may cause or what it just may not even aid for Matt Nagy.
But I think a lot of times fans just want to see that you care, even when your performance isn't the best. Mm-hmm. People are smart enough to understand you're not a machine. You can't be consistent every day. Not that that excuses some of his plays, but I did like that Eddie Jackson said what was on his mind about it. I like that he was honest about it. And I like the fact that he hates it, because you still want to see the competitor in him.
Uh-huh.
And right. I would say that was something that actually ingratiated him with a lot of people, because it shows the same emotion they have. They don't like losing either, and they don't like Eddie Jackson losing, and Eddie Jackson doesn't like it either.
And I think through the, you know, just in being realistic about it, to your point, where I didn't hear Eddie's full quote. I know, you know, kind of folks have mentioned it a couple of times this week. I haven't sat down and listened to the full context of it, but I think you can recognize that he needs to be better, that the Bears need to be better, and from his perspective, still look at it and say, well, yeah, that doesn't necessarily mean it's helpful, you know, for folks to fire, chant Nagy at all these sporting events around the country. But in the end, Matt Nagy needs to work through that. Eddie Jackson needs to be able to perform through that. And, you know, I heard you guys talking about Ryan Pace earlier. When I was on the show the other night, when I was hosting on Tuesday night, and I just, you know, ended up in the final hour I was on, sort of happening into a topic where I was talking about leftovers, because I referenced that I was going to eat leftovers from Thanksgiving when I got off the air. And then as soon as I started talking about like which players on the Bears rosters, I put it out to callers, which players on the current roster right now do you view as like the main entree, who's a side dish, and who's leftovers that you just, you know, you can kind of do without them. And, you know, got a bunch of callers about that where people were digging that. And it it did lead me down the road of just thinking about Ryan Pace. And I ended up even kind of, after I got off the air, I just went through a little exercise of jotting down different aspects of the Bears roster right now, because my
Did your phone melt?
Not yet. Okay. Not yet. It's starting to. But one of my bigger critiques of Ryan Pace.
Your teeny, tiny, adorable little phone?
I mean, I don't know why everyone wants... Why does everyone want a huge phone now?
It's so cute.
We were all alive when the big deal was get your cell phone as small as possible. And then somewhere in recent years, it went back in the other direction where folks are holding tablets up to their ear, just roaming around.
Wait till your eyes start to go. It's all fun and games.
My eyes have always been bad. That's my advantage. I didn't turn 40 and suddenly my eyes were awful. My eyes have been awful since I was in elementary school.
Wait, what do I have to look forward to?
Apparently, your eyes are likely to go bad when it happens. It's going to happen.
My brain already went. Wait, so what is your thought about Pace and the body of work?
Right.
Which you couldn't say last segment, Dan.
Right. My biggest critique is the fact that Ryan Pace has not put a system in place that develops offensive skill talent. They're just examples top to bottom over and over again, whether it is high draft picks, whether it's mid-round picks, late-round picks, quarterback, receiver, running back, where we just don't see offensive skill talent that he drafts come in here and improve, come in here and thrive. And maybe there's, like, you know, there's glimpses early in career, like a Jeremy Langford. There were glimpses early in his career where it looked like, hey, this guy may break out. Or Anthony Miller, where there's glimpses where maybe this guy may break out and it either plateaus or it regresses or it's never there with some guys like a Riley Ridley. And it just, that to me has been the biggest frustration of what has happened, whether it's, you know, obviously Ryan Pace didn't work with John Fox very long.
Nichols, if you start talking about stalled development.
But I think overall the defensive body of work for Ryan Pace's draft picks have been fine. Yeah, much better. Leonard but Floyd. Offensive skill, I struggle to find. Like, I would still view David Montgomery and Darnell Mooney as incomplete right now. We'll see whether or not they continue to thrive and improve from where they're at. But, you know, we've seen a couple of 100-yard games from Darnell Mooney. That's great. We saw that at times from Anthony Miller. And then he not only plateaued, but regressed towards the end of his time here in Chicago. So line of scrimmage, I think, yeah, it's been okay. Certainly not special. We'll see with a couple of these guys if they get on the field consistently. But certainly on the defensive side of the ball, I think there's been a lot of wins in the draft for Ryan Pace. Offensive skill, at the moment, I struggle to find anyone who I look at and say that they came here drafted by Chicago. Not only did they improve early in the career, but then sustained it and even became like a sustained level of excellence, even if it's not perennial Pro Bowler. But that to me has been my biggest critique of Ryan Pace through the draft process. You're talking quarterback, receiver, running back, who has come here and been developed, whether it's through multiple offensive systems of Matt Nagy, whatever they're doing behind closed doors to try and evaluate how they're improving the offensive productivity on the field. The individual talent at offensive skill has not gotten better in their years in Chicago, not for any sustained manner.
Next, we will talk about the lunacy that is the current college football environment.
Good word for it.
With a guy who does a lot of college football and has a lot of strong thoughts. More with Anthony Herron straight ahead. Bernstein and Rahimi on the score.
In studio.
Nice little remix there, Mike Rankin. Just mashing it up. All we need is somebody to say make some noise and a DJ air horn, and my day is complete. Make some noise. Anthony Herron is in studio.
Day complete. We are talking football with Anthony Herron. The Bernstein Rahimi show is here Monday through Friday, middays at 9 a.m. to noon. And boy, I don't really know how to describe college football at the moment and how to understand it. It is so difficult to really appreciate why some of these schools operate the way they do and why these little micro communities operate the way that they do. They just do. And it's hard for us on the outside to understand. We always say all politics is local, but that is multiply that by 100 and you start to get some sense of what college football means in these communities. And how do you look at it? Because you get to go to a lot of these communities. You've been part of one as a player, and now it's never been crazier.
The level of chaos we've seen really over the past couple of weeks, like the earlier part of this week coming off the weekend was, you know, sort of had everything else paling in comparison to it that we had seen before that. But I really was under the impression that when USC and LSU fired their coaches early in the season, that would put them behind the eight ball to make prominent hires. Because I'm just thinking you've allowed the market to reset around you, where you see Mel Tucker getting his new money and you see James Franklin getting his new money, and even PJ Fleck's name occasionally gets thrown in there, probably by PJ Fleck, but he gets his new money also. And yeah, it just seemed like, you know, you're allowing everyone else, you know, Jimbo Fisher at A&M, all these extensions happened within the next few months after a couple of really prominent jobs came open. I didn't understand why you would give everyone that heads up. Like, why place the for sale sign up in December? Just wait till March when it's really time to sell the home. But they had enough money and deep enough pockets just to kind of make it work, and it's worked out fine. Like, I don't think Brian Kelly was LSU's first choice, but I mean, it's a damn good one if you're just viewing it through the football coach lens. He has won everywhere, and he's the last three coaches at LSU won national championships. There's no reason to think Brian Kelly won't likely do the same.
Who do you think was their first choice?
I mean, probably Lincoln Riley.
Ooh.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Lincoln Riley was really the first choice for a lot of folks, but as far as just the prominent jobs that were there that have been open for months and months, a lot of the arrows pointed to multiple pursuits of Lincoln Riley. And frankly, I mean, no one's, you know, ponied up for coaches like we've seen here the last couple of weeks anyway, but certainly USC, because the Pac-12, even more so than the Big Ten, the Pac-12 is just a model where the academic arm of so many of those campuses, including USC, has such an impact on how they try to operate athletically that even a program like USC that's just accustomed to being able to open their doors and recruits come strolling through, and they're accustomed to being able
for
to
the women's crew team.
That also, yes, that happens in pretty much every athletic endeavor that's there. But I think for their athletic department at Southern California, because they have always been by far the biggest brand in the Pac-12 and never had to, you know, sort of suffer the notion that someone is surpassing them. And now they've seen Oregon surpass them in recent years here. They've seen Washington close the gap. Obviously, Stanford has had their moments on the field as well. And it's just this sustained malaise. And even in seasons where, like, Clay Helton won the Pac-12. Clay Helton in a separate year won the Rose Bowl. Clay Helton early in his time there had success, but it never felt like dominance. It just felt like they were winning a conference that was struggling. And USC, with that brand and that history of success, they said, all right, I guess we do need to pony up. We need to resource the coaching hire and the recruiting and the analysis and get back to developing talent at a level that USC hasn't in a long time.
Well, and finding a mission statement, because I think you made a lot of points that people don't think about. We talked about with Mully and Haw, too, that the last coach that had a real brand of success there is an NFL coach in Pete Carroll.
Yeah.
And I think that says a lot, because that's not the case usually in college football. Mm-hmm. And, you know, UCLA comes out with a big name hire, and Chip Kelly, too. And say what you want about him and his ability to run a team, but he is a big name. So I think those are all valid points. But then to take it back to LSU, and then to also see at the moment when Brian Kelly left, I think a little bit of shine off of Notre Dame, because you're seeing this SEC decision and the Oklahoma and Texas going there start to define everything. Like, I definitely think it defined where Lincoln Riley decided he wanted to coach.
Him. Yeah.
And you see that Brian Kelly acknowledged that he couldn't win a championship in Notre Dame, or he would have stayed, or else why do you go to LSU? So the independent football schedule doesn't become as great as it used to be. Not being in a conference wasn't as cool as it used to be. You're seeing that organization now define a lot of it, but I think that's very much why Marcus Freeman is such a game changer in all of this.
Yeah, and I didn't know a lot about Marcus Freeman as a coach before this individual year, but as soon as it seemed like the Brian Kelly thing was about to happen, which was very quick, which was very overnight, but then Marcus Freeman's name, which had been beginning to circulate a little bit throughout the year, because he has been at multiple stops a successful defensive mind, and he's a young, exciting guy, and he's proven he can, you know, be a quality recruiter as well. You know, for Notre Dame, we don't tend to see this type of hire. We tend to see the stodgy guy. We tend to see the more seasoned individual, someone who's maybe won championships elsewhere. We tend to see the white guy aside from Tyrone Willingham.
Well, that's all of college football.
Right, exactly. You know? That's not necessarily unique
for
to Notre
a lot
Dame.
Of reasons. Right.
But we can't pretend that doesn't matter. That matters, that Notre Dame is hiring a coach that looks
right.
like this. It matters.
Yeah, it matters more so at Notre Dame than a lot of other spots. Yes. But a lot of other spots have yet to, or have maybe once hired a black coach. But yes,
Texas.
from Notre Dame's perspective, exactly, the Longhorns would be on that list.
Charlie's the outlier.
but to view Notre Dame, I do think the Brian Kelly portion of the equation, I do think there's multiple factors within that, because I don't think it's as direct a shot at thinking Notre Dame maybe that he, I think he may have the sense at 60 years old that it's possible he's plateaued in South Bend, while also there's all these other forces of all these high profile gigs that came open, all the money that so many athletic departments are willing to throw at them. Jack Swarbrick, you know, kind of alluded to the notion that Brian Kelly didn't give him a chance to match. I don't know if that means maybe he would have. You know, Notre Dame certainly got the money, but would Notre Dame feel like they needed to pay $100 million guaranteed to a football coach? I don't know. But he's the winningest coach in program history. He's been in a national championship game. He's been in multiple college football playoffs. And so I think just from a competitive perspective, if you feel like you keep getting there on an annual basis, and you can make the case that Notre Dame's path is maybe easier. Not the path to talent, but the path to the playoff could be easier than going to maybe, yeah, schedule-wise, because, you know, we'll see. Stanford's a little down right now. USC may be on the comeback, obviously, like we were talking about with Lincoln Riley, but you got the service academies, you got the ACC portion of their schedule. I'm not one who just sort of poo-poos Notre Dame entire schedule, because it's difficult to sort of cross-navigate all these different conferences and schemes and everything, like, you know, like my Hawkeyes, Iowa. It would be difficult for Iowa to be a 10-win team playing some Pac-12 teams, some Big Ten teams, and some ACC teams and some service academies. Sure. Like, Iowa's just, you know, it's tough to be able to pull that off. Notre Dame pulls that off on an annual basis. And so game plan and scheme and talent, they have to be very versatile in how they have success, because there's such a wide variety of opponents that they face. So, but I do think there's a variety of factors in why Brian Kelly was willing to leave. He hasn't gotten the NFL nibbles that he's reportedly been searching for. A whole lot of money got heaped at him. It wasn't $250 million like he joked about last week, but it was a lot. It was a lot. It was $100 million. You know, it wasn't $250 million, but
see,
it was
$100 million.
Look at how
far that goes down there. It's pretty.
It's not bad.
How far that goes anywhere, anywhere
on Mars,
down the street.
You get $100 million guaranteed on Mars. You can probably have a beach house with that if you want to, out in the stratosphere. So I think there's a variety of factors, but I would imagine that the notion of potentially plateauing in South Bend versus, you know, what you have the potential to do in Baton Rouge would be a part of that, but not the only one. Because, I mean, when he goes to LSU, he's going to be in the deepest division, what's usually the deepest division in college football. The Big Ten East was deeper than the SEC West this season, but normally the SEC West is the deepest division in college football. So he's going to have a lot to contend with once he gets there.
You make a good point about the Big Ten East.
Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan State, Michigan, who's, you know, obviously trying to win the championship this Saturday.
Which was huge. And that competition in the division, as you know, and we've seen it happen in the SEC too, can hurt the individual teams.
Right.
Because of what you just talked about. And that's the real shame of this too.
Can you stick around for one more short segment?
I can. I have time. I just showed up so I can walk home, because I'm enjoying taking walks in recent days.
Oh,
it
yeah,
is.
Today
it
we
is.
Gotta get outside. The high is gonna be like 54 or something.
I've been doing it every Tuesday.
I watch the 7-day forecast now.
Every Tuesday I've been doing my cardio workout has been a lake walk. I go down to the ship, the icebreaker that's parked down here, the Abiquit that has the Columbia Yacht Club.
There's no way that's what it's called.
I think how you pronounce it. You walk all the way down and around, and I talk to fishermen. Sometimes they don't speak any English and they give me weird looks.
But don't want to talk to you.
And you just talk English louder when they do that?
I talk to myself for like 5 minutes about perch fishing, and he's like, I do not speak English. He's probably lying. But we have a special treat for you.
Okay.
It is Brian Kelly.
I like treats.
Brian Kelly, who all of a sudden, oddly, doesn't sound like himself.
Uh-oh.
I'll let you be the judge of this one, but boy, this is all you need to know about the politics of major college football. Next on The Score.
Down the bayou, we got a nice little fishing hole for people like that.
As we're impersonating Ed Orgeron off air, all this, then the real one comes on air.
The whole bit about, well, it's got to be the right fit. It's got to be the right fit. There will never be a better fit for any school than Ed Orgeron at LSU, and he's fired.
Right.
So I never want to hear that
Less
again.
Less than 2 years after a national championship.
The problem is Ed Orgeron thought he was a great fit for everyone.
Sure. Oh, great fit for you, little lady. Great fine fit for you. Oh, come on over here. Sit on my lap for a little bit. Go Tigers! I'm married to a trustee. I don't care. That don't stop me before. Oh, boy.
Did you see all the immediate...
That made it more fun.
All the immediate Twitter reaction to, like, folks thinking, like, the first time Brian Kelly's here, hears them play the song Neck. Oh, boy, is he in for it.
Oh, yeah, or the gumbo south of I-10. Yeah, I posted that one.
Right, you said he's not going to be able to handle the first bite in someone in a recruit's mama's kitchen. Maybe steam coming out of his ears with the face of the rain barrel, like at the, you know,
also,
Looney Tunes. tunes.
He'd better enjoy Neck. Who doesn't?
Well,
but that's one of the greatest college football songs of all time.
They make an adjustment to the lyrics of Neck at LSU games and make it sound like the Tigers enjoying Neck a little bit more than everybody else is. Brian Kelly better get ready.
Somebody was on to my tease here. The 847 asks, do you remember when Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner used to drop his G's and talk with a twang when he was downstate, and then he'd be completely normal upon returning to Chicago?
What is this fake like Southern accent stuff in Illinois?
Because anything south of I-80 is Alabama, that's why.
To them, on behalf of those of us bordering Mexico and the Gulf, we're like, what?
Well, they border
Kentucky.
Got a few
miles to go.
South of what? Canada?
We're seeing it right now in the Ohio Senate racer, this guy Josh Mandel. His name is Josh Mandel, and even he's like, well, I'm just one of y'all. I'm a gun toting rooting tooting west of the Pecos. So we see it everywhere. I give you this, ladies and gentlemen, this is newly minted LSU coach, football coach Brian Kelly at an LSU basketball game.
Thank you. Well, this is a great way to get started. To be a Tiger. I'm here with my family, and we are so excited to be in the great state of Louisiana, but more importantly, to be with you great fans, and to be part of what is going to be an incredible ride here at Louisiana State University.
You're from Boston!
And this is an exciting basketball team, and we've got a nice start. But I can't wait to get into Tiger Stadium this fall.
Is this the Orange Blossom special?
You're from Boston!
I'll tell you this. The greatest fans deserve an incredible football team, and we will begin starting right this minute to put together the next national championship basketball.
Was he about to say basketball team?
He was, yeah.
He was, sure he was.
That's the standard, that's the expectation. We knew that coming in. We don't apologize for it. We know it's hard work. We know there's great teams in the SEC. We respect them, but this is LSU. Go Tigers!
We don't apologize.
First of all, nobody calls it Louisiana State University.
Right.
Like, number one, if you wanted to sound authentic, that's where you start.
Well, that's a great way to get started.
That's a great way to get started.
Also,
and anyone who don't like it, we gonna barbecue your ass.
All
we
had to do was say, go Tigers beat Bama. That's it.
It's a great night.
It's a great night.
To be a Tiger.
Tiger. Oh, to be a
bless
tiger.
His heart. Wasn't yeah. that cute?
I think he's from South Boston. I think that's what that is.
That must be what it is.
Yes. I mean, my wife would know better than me. She's from that region. But I think South Boston, there's a bit of a twang there, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Yes. Those guys all sound like Ben Affleck from The Town.
Ah, yes. The Southern Massachusetts twang.
Yes. Yes.
And the movie,
well known.
And the movie that I had to rewind multiple times in order to actually pick up what they were saying. Some of us, through no fault of our own, try to not have the accent. Meanwhile, precious Brian Kelly is attempting it. Like, nobody expects you to sound like that there.
He's one of us. That's what he's hoping. He's hoping to ingrain that in people's brains, that he is one of them. Now, he's not some carpetbagger coming in from up north.
Even if people thought that, go Tigers beat Bama.
You're telling me I flew all the way to Kentucky to get some of your fried chicken and the colonel isn't even working today?
He did.
What?
I say he did.
Is Mr. Sanders in?
What's wrong with you? I say you, he did.
The colonel.
It's a great night to be a Tiger.
Go Tigers.
Go Tigers.
That is a far better Southern accent than whatever Brian Kelly just attempted.
Really? Go Tigers.
Go Tigers.
At least a little R in there. There was still some noticeable R. That'll be gone in a week.
But people,
seriously, they kind of sound like Boss Hogg.
But we find that quaint. Like that, the Boston accent is interesting. to those of us who aren't from that area, like, Louisiana accent is also a little different, but like,
very different. Yeah.
You don't have to have it right away. Like, nobody needs you to have that.
I remember when I was in the French market and I was getting alligator sausage and I was all excited. And I was getting ready to take a big old bite of it and he put it in foil and he handed it to me. He goes, "What do you want for a salt piquon?" And I said, "What? Pardon me? What do you want with some salt piquon? Some what? Some sloppy? Sauce piquon."
Oh.
And he's saying, you want to think of hot sauce.
Okay.
It was sauce piquon. P-I-Q-U-A-N-T.
Or Crystal. Crystal hot sauce. They had Crystal.
They had
Tabasco.
Anything
obviously.
You want. Well, the Tabasco store in Jackson Square is obviously right there. But like, sure, I'll have some sauce piquon. I'm told like this for the rest of the trip now.
You go to certain areas of the South and they're concerned about you and they're trying to figure out whether or not you're famished. They may ask you, G Chet?
G.
Sorry, who? G Chet?
Yes.
I'm not aware of G Chet. Oh, did you eat yet? Oh, mm-hmm. No. I am rather hungry. It is breakfast time, a little late, maybe some brunch. G Chet? Did you eat yet? Is what is being attempted.
Did I have trouble understanding that? Uh-huh, right. The first time I came here, I was in high school. It was a field trip for school, and I tried to order soda. And I was like, "Hey, can I get a Coke? What kind of pop do you want?" I'm sorry. What? Slow down, please. What kind of pop do you want?
It's pop. That's right.
I'm like, "Well, what do you have?"
"You got Green River," and
she
it.
Said, she said a bunch of stuff and then Barks Root Beer. And I'm like, "Where the hell am I?
I have to get out of here."
I'm like, "Hey, you'd better see this woman trying to sell us root beer. They ain't got no Dr. Pepper. See you later."
Well, Mr. Pibb, baby. Top
oh,
it off.
Man.
That's a Dr. Pepper without a medical degree.
Right, exactly.
They couldn't afford med school.
More of a medical assistant. Didn't actually pass all the proper courses.
You guys know why I love Hallis Hall? Because there's free Dr. Pepper.
They have RC Cola over there, too.
It's a lovely thing.
Yeah! They got RC Cola over at Hallis.
The best pop to pair with pizza.
Oh, man. You got to get over there.
Why?
I have no idea. Oh, pop with pizza. Yeah, that's a campy question.
Why is that?
I think because it doesn't take away from the pizza, but you still get that like cola taste to it. Mm. So it's not as like upfront as Coke, where maybe that's why Coke pairs better with Mexican food.
This is not, I did not have that list ready in my head. Coke pairs with Mexican food and RC Cola with pizza.
Transition with Lawrence Holmes is next on the Score.
It's a great night to be a Tiger.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.